Good afternoon. It is Tuesday, September the 25th, last Tuesday in September 2018, 13 minutes past the hour, and certainly fall has come here in Ohio. Rainy, dark days here right now, but temperatures are still up in the 70s, so we'll take it. High 60s, low 70s. Now today, our guest, one of my favorite people, and a great time to have her on, because this right might really be the big week that, well, I can't think of any bigger week since the days of Richard Nixon in the 1970s. This coming Thursday, less than 48 hours from now, we have two big decisions that are going to be made. On one hand, you've got Judge Brett Kavanaugh, who will, well, we will hear from his accuser, Dr. Ford, on Thursday. The Senate will, and then Friday they have ordered a vote on this. Now Sunday night, another accuser has come forward. Last night, Michael Avenatti, if you don't remember that name, is the attorney for Stormy Daniels, said before the hearings on Thursday there's going to be another accuser come through, maybe two, that he's representing, who are credible people. Right now they're saying there are eight Republicans who would not vote to confirm Kavanaugh right now. Will they change before Friday? And if that wasn't enough, you've got Rod Rosenstein, the Deputy Attorney General, who is overseeing the Mueller investigation, headed to the White House to meet with President Trump on Thursday. Will he resign? Will he be fired? Will nothing happen? Is it just a diversion from the Kavanaugh hearings on Thursday? If he resigns, he keeps his pension, but President Trump gets to appoint somebody without any confirmation hearings. If he's fired, it's my understanding, he loses his pension, but President Trump would have to put somebody up for confirmation. Now, Solicitor General would take over the Mueller investigation, and Jeffrey Toobin today is in the New Yorker saying, if Rosenstein goes, period, that's the end of the Mueller investigation as we know it. Now, the only person who could sort this all out is, as I say, one of our favorite guest panelists on the long-running series, The McLaughlin Group, and writer for The Daily Beast on the ground in Washington, D.C., Eleanor Clift. Eleanor, my goodness, what a week.
I don't know that I can sort that all out. you count eight Republicans who were saying they're not ready to vote to confirm Kavanaugh.
That's what I heard this morning. Was eight? I know Flake.
Wow, that I'm impressed, because I've been counting on they only need to lose one,
right?
Because it's a 51-49 Senate. They lose one, and they can afford to lose one, but they can't lose. Well, can they afford to lose one? Yes.
Yeah, I think they can afford to lose one.
They would be 50. Yeah, and then Pence would break the tie. I've been counting on Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski, but I'm not sure that they're ready to walk away from Mitch McConnell and his pressure tactics. So that's interesting if they're beginning to bolt. And in terms of Rod Rosenstein, that's a heck of a choice he's got to make. I don't think that he's going to resign, but that there's a personal financial cost to him, and he's been a government employee, so I doubt that he's independently wealthy. That puts a lot of pressure on him. If he goes there and the president fires him, he loses personally. So yeah, these are extraordinary human tragedies or tales here. I mean, you look at what the Kavanaugh family is going through. You look at what Christine Blasey Ford and her family are going through in this era of social media, where everybody feels kind of enabled to say the most awful things. And I think it's a very threatening environment on both sides. And so these are two really historic moments that are going to come together on Thursday. And as you correctly point out, you can't help wonder if the president is just kind of orchestrating this like another blockbuster episode of The Apprentice, where he's distracting from one story that might make him and his administration look bad with another story to have the press, you know, chasing after that. So all these strands are coming together. sorting them out. I'm not so sure anybody can do that. We just have to let the events unfold.
Well, but here's what I feel about the Kavanaugh thing when I said eight. Now, to get down to brass tacks, now I think a lot will, because there's apparently not going to be any FBI investigation, and there is going to be a vote on Friday. I think about five of those probably will, it'll turn into a he said, she said, and I think five will fall into the category of yes. But I think the ones who might not, and they can't afford to lose them, are Flake, Corker, and Collins. I think there's some trouble there.
Huh. Okay. And Collins, I think, I think she's feeling a lot of pressure because it's not only, you know, her attitudes about Roe v. Wade and her, you know, reputation as a pro-choice Republican. It's her personal Senate seat. I mean, she's up in 2020, and I think she could really, her Senate seat could be at risk. Flake and Corker are leaving Congress. So, in a way, they have nothing to lose and a lot to gain in terms of how history might regard this nomination. So, that's interesting that you think you put them in the maybe category. And the fact that there's no FBI and likely to be no FBI investigation. You know, if they had ordered it last week, it would probably be completed by now. And I must say that. You know, the FBI does these kinds of things all the time as part of background checks, and, you know, if they don't come up with anything, we don't hear about it. But the fact that, you know, Kavanaugh and the Republicans are resisting says to me that a lot of these people who are defending him might not really be defending him if they were under oath. So I think it's very suspect that the Republicans don't want the FBI involved. But anyway, that's part of the landscape that we're living in, and the president has so discredited the FBI that I don't think you're going to get, you know, major pushback from Republicans that the FBI is not involved.
Well, here's a question I'm asking myself right now, Eleanor, because the landscape has been set. There is going to be no FBI investigation. Dr. Ford is going to testify Thursday, and the vote's going to happen Friday. Those are things we know pretty well for sure. So if that's the setup, and there are eight Republicans on the fence today, what are the chances he gets confirmed? What could come out in that hearing that's going to make them say, okay, well, yes, he's definitely innocent?
I don't think that you can determine, you know, an airtight guilt or innocence that's going to satisfy everyone. I think it is going to be how these two people come across to ordinary Americans watching them on television, how credible Dr. Ford seems, and whether if she is believed, then I think people could still support Kavanaugh, saying, okay, this was a long time ago, and the life he's led from then until now suggests that he's a different person or he's learned or whatever. But if you have this backdrop of other women coming forward, the story that was reported in the New Yorker and the New York Times, I think Deborah Alvarez, her story is weaker in the sense that she admits that she wasn't entirely sure and had to search her memory. But her report of this heavy drinking culture and this really misogynist attitude among the young men at Yale, because she's writing about the college days, you know, certainly rings true, and other people, you know, have backed that up. And then you have Michael Avenatti, the lawyer for Stormy Daniels, entering the fray. And I know the Daily Beast has a story that says, you know, Democrats don't think that he's helping, that his involvement just makes it look, you know, very partisan and political, but we don't know what he's going to come up with, and so that's another wild card. But the Thursday hearing will be, the focus will be on two individuals and how they are sized up. And I must say, I have a piece that posted on the Daily Beast today recalling the Hill-Thomas hearings and what's the same and what's different between then and now. And Anita Hill did not have the presumption of credibility that Dr. Ford has. And so that's one thing that's quite different. And after the Hill-Thomas hearings, a poll was taken, and the public overwhelmingly believed Clarence Thomas over Anita Hill. It was like 54% to 28% or 58% to 24%, I think it was. And yet the public rebelled against the image of this soft-spoken woman being really sort of mistreated, I want to use the term manhandled, by this all-male panel of politicians. And that was what sparked the 1992 year of the woman. And I think how this plays out on Thursday and how it plays out if the Republicans try to really push this confirmation through, there's going to be a repercussion in the midterms as well. I'm not quite sure at this point which side it advantages, but I think probably the Democrats come out ahead, whatever happens in terms of voter anger and voter energy.
Well, let me ask you this, Eleanor. If Thursday is Clarence Thomas and Anita Hill, and it's people who have been coached by their lawyers, and they both tell their story, and we have no FBI investigation, in your opinion, does Kavanaugh, in this climate, with the votes he would need to get confirmed, does he get confirmed Friday if there's no big hiccups Thursday?
If the Republicans all stick, I think there's enough smoke here and maybe a little fire that the red state Democrats are going to feel comfortable voting against him. So I'm thinking all the Democrats are going to vote no. And he gets confirmed if all the Republicans stick. But I think you're right that some of them are having second thoughts, and I frankly think it comes down to Susan Collins, and she's going to have to really think long and hard about how this affects her reputation, because once Kavanaugh, if he's on the court, I think there's a cloud over his head, because there's no FBI investigation that will have cleared him in any sense. So everybody will know that he will have gotten confirmed by a majority where the vice president had to step in to break the tie. Clarence Thomas was confirmed with 52 votes, a bare majority, and Kavanaugh would come in with even fewer votes than that. So I don't think it makes Kavanaugh look good. It doesn't make the court look good. And I think there's a cost to this, and so I think Collins will be considering that, but she will also be considering her own career and the fact that she does face re-election in 2 years. And she many times has sided with people based on her faith that they're going to deliver. I mean, on health care, she thought the Republicans were going to offer up these separate pieces of legislation to plug some of the holes that were left in health care. That never happened. And Kavanaugh, if he is seated, I don't know that they're going to be overturning Roe v. Wade in the first year or two, but there are cases that are teed up that further restrict access to abortion, and I think we pretty know where his vote will be. And Collins will have to live with that over the next 2 years. So she's got her own survival to think about, and I think also how history will regard this. I mean, when you step back a minute, you think how bizarre it is. We have a president who was caught on tape boasting about sexual assault. I think 19 women have come forward with charges against him, and nothing ever happened. So it's not surprising that this president would say, this is no big deal. This is a smear campaign. But the Me Too movement has happened in every aspect of American life. And so I think, the voters and women in particular are going to be sizing this up very differently from the way they did 27 years ago, I guess it was, with Hill and Thomas.
So, Eleanor, one thing people want to know, if it does go to a vote Friday, which it looks like it's going to regardless, and it doesn't pass, then what happens?
Well, then they come up with a second nominee. I mean, this is, Ronald Reagan, He initially had a very successful Supreme Court appointment with Sandra Day O'Connor, the first woman on the court. She was confirmed 98-0. It was really a home run. And then he came back with Judge Bork, who had been official in the Justice Department, who had fired Archibald Cox during the Nixon era and was part of the Saturday Night Massacre. And he was a brilliant jurist, and he had written a lot. And one of the things he challenged was Roe v. Wade and the fact that it was based on an assumed right to privacy in the Constitution, a right that he didn't think existed. And so he came to a vote. There was a vote on him, and he failed. So then Reagan came back with Justice Kennedy, and this was 30 years ago, and Kennedy just stepped down this June. So there had been failed nominations before. The problem that the Republicans face is if they put somebody else up, can they quickly get this person through before the midterms, because they're afraid they're going to lose the majority in the Senate. It's a long shot, because the Democrats would have to really perform well in a number of states, and they would have to hold their own in states that Trump has won, in some cases, by 20 and 30 points. So it's a big challenge, but it is possible. And so the Republicans are afraid to let it go over past November. So that's the challenge they face. And I think the Democrats think that if they can delay this long enough, one, they may get a nominee who is more centrist, and two, if they do take the Senate, they may be able to deny this president any more Supreme Court seats. And I think they feel that that's a fair return for the Republicans having refused to grant even a hearing to President Obama's nominee in the last year of Obama's presidency.
So if Kavanaugh is not confirmed on Friday, there is a strong possibility that the Republicans will not get to vote on the president's next nominee before the midterm elections.
Right. I mean, they would like to tee up, I think her name is Amy Comey Barrett. She's only been on the federal court, I think, for a year. She is a very committed Catholic, and she had an exchange with Senator Feinstein that went viral during her confirmation hearing for the lower court, because she has written and said that Catholics should recuse themselves from certain cases because of their religious beliefs. And Feinstein said something about the dogma in her opinions, and so that she wouldn't be an easy confirmation either. And they'd want to vet her thoroughly, and that takes time. So it's hard to see how they could get anyone through in that big a hurry. Now they could try to confirm someone in lame duck Senate, because after the election, they could call a special session of the same Senate. But I'll tell you, if the Republicans are really repudiated in the elections, will the Susan Collins of the world really want to stick their neck out that far for any Trump nominee? So there's a lot of hurdles to overcome to actually seat somebody quickly before the midterms, although I don't doubt that the Republicans would try to do that should Kavanaugh fail.
Well, this brings us to the person who has made the nomination and who would be making the next nomination, the president. He's in a little bit of it this week because Rod Rosenstein, the deputy attorney general, apparently was headed to the White House yesterday to resign and stopped for some reason. Now, is that the truth of that story as you see it and believe it, Eleanor?
No, because I think there were competing leaks coming out of the Justice Department and the White House, and I think the White House was suggesting that he was coming to resign, perhaps maybe hoping they were prodding him to do so. But I think the more recent reporting is that Rosenstein has no plans to resign. And if the meeting with the president is now set for Thursday, and if the president basically wants him to leave, I think he's going to make the president fire him. So, and there's been a lot of pressure on President Trump to not fire Rosenstein. Sean Hannity on his Fox television show, and Hannity is close to the president. They apparently talk a lot, and the president picks up a lot of his talking points from Hannity. And Hannity looked into the camera and said, "You know, Mr. President, if you're listening, do not fire Rosenstein. This is a plant. This is a setup." I mean, he apparently believes that the leak to the New York Times, which precipitated this whole crisis, that after the Comey firing more than a year ago, that Rosenstein was talking about wearing a wire into the Oval Office to collect information that would sort of force the vice president and the cabinet into implementing the 25th Amendment and forcing him out of office. Other accounts say that Rosenstein was gallows humor when he suggested he would wear a wire. And Rosenstein, it does seem out of character. He's such a kind of a sober civil servant. I think he's been at the Justice Department for 30 years. And he's not part of the cabinet, so he would have no vote in anyway. But that story getting out, it was like handing the president a gift package that said, if you want to fire Rosenstein, here's your chance, because you can clearly get him for lack of loyalty and insubordination because of these comments. So you have to ask yourself, would it hurt or help Trump going into the midterms to fire Rosenstein? Or what is Trump's greater goal? I mean, I think he would like to do almost anything possible to end the Mueller investigation. And I think if that's his bottom line, it doesn't matter whether he fires Rosenstein now or after the midterms. If he wants to end that that investigation. But if he fires Rosenstein, the person who replaces him would have to be confirmed by the Senate. And I think the Senate would try to put some provisos in there to protect Mueller. And could the Senate act fast enough anyway? You know, so there's just a lot of procedural hurdles there.
Oop, I think we lost Eleanor there. Maybe we're being bugged by the White House. I tell you what, we are going to take a quick Eleanor Clift right this. Hold on to your hats. We're going to be back momentarily. Don't you dare go anywhere. This is WWGH Radio 107.1 FM.
We're having fun every day from 1 to 3 p.m. on Now with Scott Spears right here on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Just ask legendary comedian Phyllis Diller.
Why hasn't the world found not and put him on a pedestal and, you know, Larry King can't live forever.
Or legendary actress Jane Meadows.
That's one of the reasons I tell you you're the best of all the interviewers. And that's why I love you and your show, dear.
Actress and singer Marla Gibbs.
As long as you breathe, you'd better believe it's never too late for life. So drop all your fear, cause as long as you're here, it's never too late for life.
Our professional wrestler and movie star, Ox Baker.
I want to tell you, listeners of the WWGH, this is Ox Baker. Mary Ohio, I know you listen to WWGH. You better start listening.
Or the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams.
Hello there, how are you? Scott Spears, Ted Williams here in Columbus, Ohio. And Scott, I just want to let you know I love you as an individual. I always refer to Marion as being the home of WCMH's Bob Nunnally, and now I refer to it as the home of Scott Spears.
That's Now with Scott Spears, 1 to 3 p.m. Monday through Friday, right here on WWGH 107.1 FM, the place to be.
And we're back here at 37 minutes past the hour with Eleanor Clift. Eleanor, we got cut off there, but I want to, this yes. Rosenstein issue, the question I have is, the USA Today reported today that there were talks over the weekend between Kelly and Rosenstein, and that a letter is being drafted for his exit. I guess that's all speculation at this point, but my question is why, if Rosenstein has no intention to resign, why is he being called to the White House Thursday?
Well, I imagine the air has to be cleared. I mean, that he evidently has been talking to Kelly, but, you know, Trump must be furious. And so would like him to come and grovel a little, I imagine. And conceivably, they are going to hand him his walking papers. I mean, I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility either. And also, again, we have this president who operates like a reality TV producer, and having Rosenstein come to the White House, it sets up a whole opposite drama in case you want some diversion from the Kavanaugh Ford hearing. So I think it sets up another storyline, and one that the president probably would prefer to talk about than having this woman testifying about sexual allegations of assault against his Supreme Court nominee. So there's that too. you know, I remember an acclaimed photographer who once took photos of Trump and was just chatting him up so that, you know, the picture would be candid, and asked him, you know, how he felt with so many storms swirling around him every day, and Trump responded, "I am the storm." I think, you know, this is the world he likes to live in. The more drama, the better.
Well, this becomes the bigger question then. If he does come in there Thursday and there is no resignation by Rosenstein, and he does think that he has the power to fire him, if he does that Thursday, as Jeffrey Toobin writes in the New Yorker today, that's the end of the Mueller investigation. Is that the line that he can't cross, that it's going to make the Republicans say you can't do this or start impeachment proceeding, or will anything happen?
I haven't seen the Toobin piece. Does it, what is his rationale for coming to that conclusion? He believes that Trump just has to end the Russia investigation, well, because it's getting too close to him and his family.
Yeah, well, basically the idea that Toobin reports today in the New Yorker is that if Rosenstein is no longer overseeing it, you're either going to have the Solicitor General step in, who has no want to oversee this, or no want to see it continue, or you're going to have to wait for somebody. If he does resign, then he's going to appoint somebody who doesn't want to see it continue.
Right.
So it's the end of it, essentially, if Rosenstein...
It's the end of it regardless. Yeah. Well, I think, you know, if they have to confirm someone, I think, you know, the Senate might show a little backbone and not necessarily just confirm a Trump toady. But that would take time, and it could constrain Mueller. Now, Mueller, for his part, has farmed out parts of the investigation, but I think Toobin, you know, makes the right point, because Mueller answers to the Justice Department. The independent counsel law that existed under Nixon and existed through the Clinton era, where the president couldn't fire the independent counsel, the independent counsel was protected, that law lapsed. And so, the independent counsel, in this case, Mueller, his boss is the Justice Department. And if the person at the Justice Department decides that what he's coming up with is really not relevant, or he doesn't think it should be presented to Congress, I mean, he can take whatever Mueller comes up with and just shelve it. I mean, I think there'd be an enormous political outcry, but that's possible. And he can constrain Mueller. He can He can squeeze him with funding. He can not approve various actions that Mueller wants to take, because presumably Mueller has been working closely with Rosenstein in conducting this investigation. So, yeah, I would defer Tubin. I mean, he wrote a book on the Supreme Court called The Nine that was very well received. I mean, he knows his stuff. I'd listen to what he said.
Well, one of the points he made was, even if he does fire Rosenstein and it does have to go to this confirmation and Trump doesn't get to pick somebody who's going to oversee it very quickly, that the moment Rosenstein is fired on Thursday, the Solicitor General is now overseeing it, and this guy is not going to oversee it like Rosenstein, and he might put an end to it before the guys ever confirm that Trump puts up for nomination. And that's the crux of the matter.
Solicitor General is a he has no prosecutorial experience. He has very strong Republican leanings, if I'm correct about that. And so, yeah, you can't look at him and say that he's going to protect Mueller. No, that's been Rosenstein's main task. I mean, he's been the protector of the Mueller investigation. And, you know, the country, the polls show that the public wants the investigation to be completed, that the public has confidence in Mueller. But whatever this president is hiding, or whatever he is protecting, he really wants to pull the plug on that investigation. And so, I can't predict what he will do. But you do have, you know, some Republicans who think that the firing of Rosenstein would kind of trip the same negative outcry as the Saturday night massacre, except for the fact that the New York Times, that report, really gave the president ample cause to fire Rosenstein. He could say he's doing it because he's not loyal, because he's trying to stage this coup from within to replace me. I think most of us know it's because he wants to end the Russia investigation, but he certainly has other things he could say and that a lot of people are going to believe. And that New York Times story, for the first time I found myself wishing that they rely on anonymous sources, and I realize that's what you have to do because otherwise you'd get no information. But they needed to give some indication of the motive of the person or persons behind this leak, because now we're left wondering whether it was a plant by, you know, either people hostile to the Russia investigation, hoping to get the president to take this action, thinking it would precipitate the end of the investigation. This is a story that's more than a year old. It goes back to the Comey firing. So I think the New York Times owed us a little more context for a story that could lead to such explosive consequences.
Well, that becomes the thing on Thursday. If Rosenstein is forced to resign or whatever, fired, we know that the reason given is going to be the New York Times piece. But the question mm-hmm. is, do Republicans go silent, like they have when other things like this have happened, or is this the straw that breaks the camel's back?
I would like to think it's the straw that breaks the camel's back, and I think a lot of people have assumed that that's what it is, and that's why the president would, you know, damn it, didn't quite do it. But when it's this midterms, Republicans are just, they're just, you know, sucking it in and saying, you know, we're with him, because they feel that they're in worse shape if they back away from their president this late in the game. So I'm not entirely sure that it will create the same kind of blowback that happened when Nixon had Archibald Cox fired. Does Tubin speculate at all as to whether he thinks this would be a red line for Republicans?
Well,
it should be, but...
that they all say that, and I think that's what he pretty well speculates in the piece, is that this is a big deal, and that's why it was a big deal yesterday when it was happening. But, you know, nobody yesterday, and I haven't heard anybody today, and we'll see if it happens tomorrow, nobody's saying, don't do this. Republicans. I've seen some Democrats say it on these shows, but I've seen no Republicans say it. I've seen Republicans say, well, if you can't trust your deputy attorney general, he's got to go.
Right. Well, that's, you know, Lindsey Graham to me has been a big disappointment because he's just lined up right behind Trump on this. No, Sean Hannity is the one person who said don't fall for this. This is a trap. But that was last week, and you know this is a different week, and I haven't heard Hannity come up.
And I think we went down again. But you know what? We're going to bring Eleanor Cliff back here because we want to hear what she has to say in our final 12 minutes. But this is the interesting point, and it all comes down to Thursday. Thursday, just 48 hours from now, we're going to know about Kavanaugh. We're going to know about President Trump. We're going to know about Rod Rosenstein. And it all comes down to one day, Thursday, September the 27th, 2018. That might be a day that's going to live in infamy. What will happen tonight? Will Michael Avenatti's accuser come through? Will we know her name? Will that mean anything? Is anybody going to tell the president this is something he should not do? Are we going to hear from Rod Rosenstein? We don't know. That's the point we're at right now. We just don't know. But I will tell you this. Something else going on today in the news, by the way, that we are waiting on. Bill Cosby will be sentenced today at 1:30 p.m. And the story we have right now is that Cosby did not address the court in the sentencing hearing. His, let's see here, I think at this particular point what they're saying is, so far, before they laid the sentence down, is that the judge rules Cosby is classified as a sexually violent predator. Now, who would have ever thought we would have said those words in the United States? Bill Cosby is classified as a sexually violent predator and will be sentenced at 1:30 today. Eleanor, I hope they're not bugging our phones.
I don't understand why my cell phone is so faulty today. I'm sorry about that.
No, Eleanor, I just wonder because, see, it's kind of interesting to me Thursday because, obviously, I think we all get why it was set for Thursday because the Kavanaugh thing is going on. But if the report is out that Rosenstein is fired, certainly that's going to dominate the news. And does that push Kavanaugh through because nobody got to hear what Ford had to say?
You know, that could be the thinking, yeah, because you're right. Ford will, she speaks last. I mean, Kavanaugh speaks first. Oh, no, she speaks first, and then he replies. So, but it depends how much grandstanding all the senators have to do before they get to the questioning. I think she speaks first. She makes the accusation, and he defends himself is how it works.
And I don't know. Like I said, I'm with Tubin on this, and I defer to him. If Rosenstein is gone Thursday, that's the end of the Mueller investigation. And if that is true and nobody moves, then I guess this was 13 months of wasted time, 15 months.
Yeah, I guess I can't quite believe. I mean, you've got people, you've got sentencing of Flynn happening in December. You've got Manafort sitting in jail. Do they just, you know, did they just say, okay, just kidding?
That's what I what do
I got. I got to feel that there are ways to keep going or alive.
I tell you, we're running up to it again. Eleanor's phone is malfunctioning, and she brings up an interesting point here. What do we do about all the people who are in jail because of this investigation, all the plea deals, all the circumspect that's been going on with Flynn and people? Are they just, sorry, you're free now, and this was all a big joke? I don't know. It's very, very complicated. And I don't know what you do. I really don't know what you do in this particular matter, but I hope Eleanor gives us a call back. Maybe she's close to a landline, and they won't be able to shut that one off, so we'll get her back here. Malfunctioning cell phone. It is 52 minutes past the hour. Eleanor Cliff, though, has filled us in on so much today that I think here Eleanor comes back. Eleanor, here we are.
I've now gone outside.
Oh, okay. But it's what I was saying was, what happens to Flynn? What happens to Papadopoulos? What happens to Manafort?
Exactly. You know, these are things that are in train. I would think that the Congress would at least, you know, keep some mechanism in place, or that the person who steps in to take Rosenstein's job will understand that if he just, you know, pulls the plug on all that, how history's going to regard him. So maybe Trump can't just count on someone to do his bidding.
We'll see. And one of the other things also on the table is that if the Solicitor General, because remember, if we all have to remember that no matter what happens Thursday, a resignation, a firing, if Rosenstein is no longer in that position, the Solicitor General will take over. Now, the amount of time he'll be in there will be on how the firing happens or resignation, but will he immediately shut down the money that Mueller has? Will he? And that stuff we would never know.
Right. I don't know. I mean, I think I've been busy saying the institutions of government are holding strong. The judiciary is working. The Congress has been the only branch that really has not stepped up to do its job. And so I think Toobin is probably right. Then the ball really is in the Republicans' court, and everybody knows what this president is doing. I mean, this would be obstruction of justice, basically, and it should be treated as such. And because the Republicans have such a narrow majority, and because you do have two members, Jeff Flake and Bob Corker, who will be leaving, I'm thinking that they will stand up.
Eleanor, go ahead.
We just got to hope that that Republicans will grow some sort of a spine.
I've got to think that all these people who have flipped and all these people who have made plea deals have got to hope that Rosenstein stays in that position, because could that information be given to the president by the Solicitor General, what they've told him? You know, it's a very peculiar situation.
Right. But is this Solicitor General whose name is not on the tip of my tongue, is this person willing to stand up and take the brunt of what history will hand him if he simply follows the dictates of a president who should be hands off of a Justice Department? So let's hope he's made of more than we might initially think.
Eleanor, with 4 minutes left, I want to get your comment on this, because this is certainly no doing of the president, but this is going to take headline news tonight. From Bill Cosby's sentencing hearing is today, and the judge has ruled that Cosby is classified as a sexually violent predator, and at 1:30 he will be sentenced. Tonight, Bill Cosby could be in prison. Do you think that's going to happen, Eleanor?
You know, like a lot of people, I admired Bill Cosby. These charges are sickening, and you want him to be accountable, and maybe some time in jail is appropriate. But I'd rather see his significant fortune taken away and dedicated to, causes. Women who have faced sexual abuse would be one good cause, but I'd like to see him pay a very significant financial penalty. I don't necessarily feel like I want to watch him die in jail.
What they're asking for the sentencing memorandum was 5 to 10 years imprisonment and $25,000.
Okay, I would take the lower part of the time in jail. I might even cut the 5 in half, and I would quintuple. Many times over, that $25,000 is pocket change to Bill Cosby. They were to get much more money out of that. Is the $25,000 for the particular woman who
testified? A prosecutor's
okay, well,
fees, yeah.
I'd like, that's fine, too, but there should be much more money that can be dedicated to, you know, causes that that get at this awful problem that he's been part of.
You know, Eleanor, apparently today in court now, even if he goes somewhere overnight, if he doesn't end up in prison, he has to call the police and register as a sexually violent offender. He could end up in prison. It's awful what he did to these women, but do you think Bill Cosby will speak? And now that the trial will be over and he has nothing else to lose once this 130 sentencing is over, do you think he's going to tell his side of the story? And do you think it'll mean anything?
I don't think he has much of a side of the story to tell. I think he's either going to be very defiant, which is not going to help his cause, or he's a broken man who really can't really grasp what has happened to him. I think it would be one of those two attitudes, and I don't know that his lawyers would be telling him that he should speak out. I don't think either of those would help him very much.
Eleanor, if I would have came to you 3 years ago and said Donald Trump's going to be president and Bill Cosby could be going to prison, we'd be having this conversation. Who would have thunk it?
Yeah, I would have thought that you had the names reversed or something. I never much thought about Donald Trump though 3 years ago, I must say, and that was probably a mistake. He was coming on strong into that presidential race, and most of us dismissed him, and he touched a nerve in American society, cultural nerve. But you know, he didn't win the popular vote, and 78,000 votes in three states basically put him in the White House, and you could put that number of people in a good-sized football stadium. So it's not like he's got this enormous following in the country. In fact, just the opposite. He's a historically unpopular president.
It's going to be interesting Thursday and Friday to see what happens, but I would guess that whatever the president does with Rosenstein, there's some figuring in Kavanaugh into that equation.
Right.
So we'll see. It's interesting. Eleanor, thank you as
okay.
always.
Oh, all right. Thank
what a
you.
Story. Thank you. Bye-bye. Eleanor Cliff, we're going to take a break. And at 1:30, we're going to be live on the air with Thunderbolt Patterson when Bill Cosby is sentenced possibly to prison. I just don't know anymore. We're coming back in 10 minutes. 1:30.
7.1 FM LP Marion, Ohio. The place for all the big events. For Scott Spears and Terry Tackett at the 2006 series in Cleveland, Ohio,